This material is a profound academic white paper detailing how ungrieved collective trauma and the self-preservation instincts of institutions combine to create a cyclical system of globalized insecurity and war.
Yeah, it really is a massive undertaking.
It is, and we're going to dive right into the feedback today. So a key theme running through this material seems to be the tension between human life and institutional survival.
Absolutely. And, you know, the author has constructed this masterful, multi-layered diagnosis of hidden power.
Right. But the sheer density of the analysis presents an editorial opportunity to maximize its impact.
I completely agree. I mean, the writer's deep expertise is just so obvious right from the start.
It really is. But I was thinking about this, and tell me if this analogy makes sense to you. Reading this right now feels a bit like a brilliant architect showing a client the complex structural blueprints before showing them the 3D rendering of the beautiful house.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's clearly laid out. I wonder, though, if we've considered how the initial framing impacts the reader's engagement.
Exactly. Like, do they even care about the house yet?
Right. Because, well, the conceptual framing of this material risks alienating the reader by leading with its most complex theoretical architecture.
Yeah, it throws you into the deep end immediately.
It really does. So, looking at the weakness here, the text introduces highly dense academic terminology really early on. Specifically, there's this concept in section 2, institutional autopoetization. Technically, it's accurate, leading with concepts from systems theory, you know, thinkers like Luhmann and Maturana.
Oh, right, the biology guys.
Exactly. Autopoiesis describes how biological cells reproduce and maintain themselves. But applying that to state machinery creates an immediate intellectual barrier.
Because you're suddenly reading a biology and systems theory textbook instead of a piece about global insecurity.
Right. It temporarily obscures the profoundly human and, frankly, visceral stakes of the paper. It separates the reader from the core tragedy of how these systems literally consume human life.
Which is the whole point of the piece. So, what's the suggestion to fix that?
Well, the suggestion is to delay or deeply contextualize this heavy systemic jargon. You want to anchor the opening sections purely in the tangible emotional reality of the core argument.
Oh, I see. So make them feel it first.
Exactly. Let the reader feel the weight of the globalization of ungrieved insecurity before giving them the technical academic term for how institutions cause it.
Right. Give them the symptom before the diagnosis. What would be a concrete example of how to do that?
Okay, so instead of starting section 2 with the abstract definition of institutional autopoietization, the author could open with the visceral, grounded language that's already present later in the text.
Oh, so they already have the right words. They just need to move them up.
Exactly. Bring forward the parts about the conversion of living populations into expendable substrates. Or, you know, how institutions turn humans into cannon fodder.
Cannon fodder. Wow. Yeah, that hits so much harder than autopoiesis.
Right? Or, as another example, bring that powerful iceberg of violence visual concept right to the front.
Oh, I loved that part, where the visible tip is the physical war, but the massive underwater part is the cultural violence.
Exactly. And the cycle of the globalization of ungrieved insecurity, you know, where fear leads to projection, then enemy construction, then militarization. Put that up front to hook the reader emotionally.
That makes so much sense. And then, once they're invested, you drop the term autopoiesis as the label for this tragedy they are already watching unfold.
You got it. It makes the jargon feel earned.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, once we've ensured the reader is emotionally hooked at the entry point, we need to look at how they travel through the bulk of the argument.
Right. The pacing of the theory.
Exactly. Let's look closely at the section discussing the Middle East war system. That's section 9.
Ah, yes, the Big East study.
Yeah, and I have to ask, does keeping all the theoretical frameworks in the first 8 sections and saving the real-world application for section 9 make the text feel totally unbalanced?
That's a great question. Is the connection between A and B fully established in the material? Or is that an area to potentially bolster?
Right, because right now it feels like 2 separate documents almost.
It does. The structural isolation of the primary case study in a late section limits its potential to organically illuminate the theoretical frameworks.
It's like you're asked to memorize a dictionary before you get to read a story.
That is exactly the weakness here. The author builds incredibly detailed models, the secrecy shield, the layers of structural and cultural violence, the evidence ladder for 8 whole sections in a vacuum.
Just pure theory for, what, dozens of pages?
Yeah. And applying all of these sequentially to the burning case study of Israel, Palestine, Lebanon, and Iran, only in Section 9, it forces the reader to hold way too much abstract theory in their head without a concrete anchor.
Like a massive cognitive overload. By the time I get to the Middle East section, I've forgotten how the secrecy shield works.
Exactly. So the suggestion here is to weave the Middle East examples, and honestly other historical examples too, organically throughout the earlier theoretical sections.
Oh, I see. Break it up.
Yeah. Use the case study as the connective tissue that proves the theory in real time, rather than treating it as a concluding exam at the end of the paper.
So how would that look in practice? Can you give a concrete example of weaving it in?
Sure. So when the author is discussing structural violence and things like debt and sanctions in Section 6, they shouldn't wait until Section 9 to mention the West Bank settlement expansion or the Gaza blockade.
Right, because those are perfect real-time examples of structural violence.
Exactly. Use them right there as the primary examples of life compression. Don't speak in hypotheticals when you have the historical reality ready to go.
That makes the theory so much easier to digest. What about the trauma section?
Yes, Section 3 regarding ungrieved trauma. The author should directly interleave the specific, powerful mentions of the Holocaust, the Nakba, and Lebanon Civil War right into that section.
To show how trauma actually becomes a security doctrine in real life.
Exactly. Show, don't just tell. It grounds the theory instantly.
That's such a strong fix. And, you know, the material makes a strong case for the necessity of radical systemic change by highlighting the deep intertwined roots of violence.
It really does. The diagnosis is terrifyingly thorough.
It is. It creates this immense sense of suspense for how humanity can possibly escape this cycle, which brings us to the solution part of the text.
Right. Building on that point, what if we looked at it from the perspective of a policymaker trying to implement these ideas?
Oh, like someone actually trying to legislate this?
Exactly, because the proposed counterinstitution functions brilliantly as a philosophical ideal, but lacks the practical grounding needed for real-world implementation.
That makes sense. It felt a little, disconnected from the gritty reality of the problem.
That's the weakness in a nutshell. The problem is mapped out with devastating specificity, right? We get intelligence agencies, arms deals, financial violence, algorithmic manipulation.
Yeah, you see all the gears of the machine.
Right. But however, the solution, the life knowledge commons in Section 12, is described primarily in abstract philosophical terms.
Like as a shared civilizational practice.
Exactly. A shared civilizational practice and a discipline of non-disposability. It sounds beautiful, but it feels slightly hollow compared to the detailed anatomy of the sacrificial state.
It's like fighting a very specific, heavily armed bureaucracy with a philosophical concept.
Right. So the suggestion is to balance the philosophical beauty of the life knowledge commons with highly concrete operational examples of what these correctives actually look like in action.
So give the solution the same level of granular detail as the problem.
Precisely. Show the reader the mechanics of peace just as clearly as the mechanics of war.
I love that. The mechanics of peace. What's a concrete example of how the writer could operationalize this?
Well, take the idea of secrecy to accountability conversion. To demonstrate that, the author should propose what a specific oversight body might look like.
Like a literal committee?
Yeah, like a civilian-led tribunal with actual legally binding declassification powers. Give us the bureaucratic reality of it.
Oh, wow. So if an intelligence agency hides behind classified budgets, this tribunal could just legally rip the doors open.
Exactly. It makes the abstract concept of accountability into a functional weapon.
That is way more compelling. Are there other examples in the text that need this treatment?
Definitely. The author introduces these tests, the minimum harm test or the mutual survivability test regarding sanctions.
Right, the idea that a sanction can't destroy a population's ability to survive.
Yeah. But to enforce that, the author needs to give an example of how the UN, or maybe an independent global financial body, could legally veto debt structures.
So, if the IMF tries to impose a debt structure that restricts a population's access to water or medicine, this body steps in and says, no, that fails the minimum harm test.
Exactly. Show us the legal levers. Tell us who pulls them and what happens when they do. That grounds the philosophy into global policy.
That makes the ending of the paper so much stronger. It gives the reader an actual blueprint, not just a, you know, a nice thought.
Exactly. It turns the philosophy into an actionable toolkit.
Well, this has been an incredibly insightful breakdown. Let's recap. The material is absolutely a tour de force of systemic analysis.
Unquestionably. It's a vital piece of writing.
It is. And to elevate it further, the writer should focus on three actionable steps. First, contextualize the dense systemic jargon by leading with the emotional and visceral realities of trauma.
Right. Delay the autopoiesis talk until they feel the impact.
Exactly. Second, weave the Middle East case study throughout the early sections to ground the theoretical frameworks.
Bring the Gaza blockade and the Nakba right into the theory sections.
Yes. And third, provide concrete operational examples of how the life knowledge commons and the life coherence tests would actually be implemented in global policy.
Give us those civilian tribunals and UN veto powers.
Exactly. We warmly invite the listener to implement these structural edits and submit the revised material back in for further feedback. We can't wait to see how it shapes up.